able to do and stand up for.
Ending with the quote of Muhammad Ali, I am America. I am the part you won't recognize, but get used to me. Black, confident, cocky, my name not yours, my religion not yours, my goals my own. Get used to me. Muhammad Ali died this weekend at the age of 74. His funeral's in Louisville, Kentucky, on Friday. Thousands are expected to attend. Ishmael Reed, thanks so much for being with us. Educator, writer, and activist. His book, The Complete Muhammad Ali, and Elizabeth Alexander, poet and chancellor of the Academy of American Poets, author of the persona poem, Narrative Ali, written from the perspective of Muhammad Ali. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is now 8 o'clock. Do you own a business? Have you considered promoting your work to Portland's most progressive audience? Of course, you know that KBOO is fiercely non-commercial and always will be, but we do look for local business partners to help sponsor or underwrite our programs. Underwriters receive acknowledgments during the shows they underwrite, which lets listeners know who you are, what you do, and how to reach you. Everybody wins. Your business becomes aligned with KBOO's values of peace, justice, and multiculturalism, and KBOO is able to continue providing access, training, and programming for the entire community. To learn more about KBOO underwriting and to see a complete list of our sponsors, go to kboo.fmunderwriting or call Justin at 503-231-8032. Your clients are listening. Coming up next is more talk radio with our hosts Celeste Carey and Cecil Prescott. Today's guest is local organizer and activist Kathleen Sadat, who will share her views about the continuing struggles for justice.
KBOO at the Clinton is our monthly film series at the Clinton Street Theater. The film this month, Pinkwashing Exposed, will play Thursday, June 9th at 7 p.m. Pinkwashing is a term used when entities engaged in terrible human rights violations promote themselves as gay-friendly to improve their public image. Israel is the country most famous for this strategy. Pinkwashing Exposed explores how pinkwashing works and what activists are doing to fight back, including activists from Seattle who succeeded in 2012 in canceling high-profile queer events and more. Again, that's Pinkwashing Exposed. Thursday, January 9th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information is available at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
Tune in to KBOO Wednesday, June 8th at 9 a.m. for the second installment of our podcast series on criminalization, produced by the Center for Intercultural Organizing. We'll hear stories about profiling, criminalization, and featured commentary by CIO staff. Again, that's the second program in our criminalization podcast series, one produced by the Center for Intercultural Organizing, Wednesday, June 8th at 9 a.m., here at your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
Community Radio is a proud sponsor of the Diversity in Cannabis Networking Rally, Saturday, June 11th at 4 p.m. at the Village Ballroom in Portland. The first Minority Cannabis Business Association Networking Rally invites all who are interested in learning about the cannabis industry or networking with business owners, activists, medical professionals, and regulators. Again, that is the Diversity and Cannabis Networking Rally, Saturday, June 11th at 4 p.m. at the Village Ballroom, 704 Northeast Deakin Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Good morning.
Today is June 6, 2016, and you are listening to KBOO.FM, your community radio station, 90.7 in Portland, 91.9 in Hood River, Eugene. Oh, gosh, I always get this wrong. But if you're listening to it, you know where you are. And this is More Talk Radio. I am Cecil Prescott, and I will be joined shortly by my co-host, Celeste Carey. And again, 90.7 in Portland, 91.9 in Hood River, 104.3 in Corvallis. Today is June 6th, and we are pleased to have with us Kathleen Sadat, who has a long list of accomplishment and someone who's been in the forefront of many civil and human rights struggles for many decades. Kathleen will be leaving her position at the oversight, explain it to
the Community Oversight Advisory Board, which is a part of the settlement agreement between the Department of Justice and the City of Portland. The function of the board is to have a community voice into, advisory voice into the reform of the Portland Police Bureau. Good morning, Cecil.
Thank you, and thank you for helping me out. You know, I'm kind of slow. It takes me a while sometimes to get started. Good morning, Kathleen. You'll be leaving that position at the end of the month?
June 24th.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then you'll be entering once again into retirement?
Yes, I'm going to retire again. I expect I'm going to stay retired this time. I may do a little consulting, probably some writing, but I'm tired. I'm 75 years old. I'll be 76 this year. And when they asked Thurgood Marshall, Justice Marshall, why he was retiring, he said, "Hell, I'm old."
And that's good enough. That's good enough. So I want to talk a little bit about this current position, but I want to have a wider discussion and for you to share some of your reflection of human rights struggles, where we are as a community in the struggle for justice and equality, and to help us understand how far we have yet to go from your perspective. And certainly from your years of service and activism, certainly there have been highs and lows. And I'm wondering, just generally, because you've been at it for so long, what keeps you going?
Well, belief in people. I believe in the ideas of democracy, and I believe in the people I see around me. And I think we often think that people are negative when they're not. We often think that people can't do things. And one of the reasons that one of the barriers to people doing the work that they want to do is tools and understanding of systems. And we have, over the years, kind of removed that the tools and the abilities to understand the system by changing the educational system so that it's more rote, more test focus, as opposed to an actual learning about the world. I think over time, we have expected the systems to be changed by the people who created the systems in the first place. And if you remember what Audre Lorde said, she said, "You cannot dismantle the ruler's house by using the ruler's tools." So this calls for new ideas. This calls for different approaches. And it calls for looking at the past to make sure we understand some of what went on there. It's not simple. It's very complicated. And we need to embrace that complexity and talk with one another, because that's the only way we'll be able to see it more clearly.
So how do we embrace that complexity? It seems so much simpler to make things very clear and simple. And complexity, makes it more difficult.
Complexity frightens us. It's not a simple answer. It makes us vulnerable to possibilities. And we talk about, Nishaki Shange talked about possibilities. Well, possibilities don't they don't exist in the here and now. It's what's going to happen in the future. It's easier to say black and white is the cause of this, or rich and poor is the cause of that. But there's a lot of stuff in the middle that needs to be looked at. And there's a lot of ambiguity that frightens us. It's safer to know this is yes and this is no. That just feels better for a lot of people. To embrace it is to love change, is to love yourself, is to love your community. Your community, whatever community you're talking about, is not a monolith. We talk community as though it's just one thing. Well, I think communities come together often around one idea. But within that are other ideas about other things that shape how that community moves. If we aren't paying attention to that complexity, we end up sort of thwarting ourselves and not doing the best we can for all of us. We just do it for just the idea and not necessarily the people.
So is there some beauty in that complexity?
Definitely. That complexity is what we call diversity. And it's out of that that we get the new ideas, that we get the comfort that we need for the individuals that are in there trying to do the work or trying to live their lives. The human beings are wonderful. They're amazing. And you can look at any physical structure on this planet and go, wow, who thought of that? You know, you look at that building over in the Arab Emirates, that you go, wow, look at that. You look at a dam, you look at all the things that human beings, a church, look at the work that has gone into places of worship around this planet. It's amazing. And we do amazing things with one another, when we help one another, when we help each other grow, when we take care of one another. And I was raised in the 40s, segregated community. You didn't throw anybody away. So even the person who may not fit somebody else's idea of what is okay was a part of the community. You didn't throw them away. You found a job for them. You found a place for them. You found something that gave them support within that community. It seems like we have, and I'm talking we now, those of us who were born into that kind of situation, have now moved toward this idea of individualism. And if you don't meet these standards, then you're not okay. How dare we? How dare we? Now, there are standards of behavior that you have to have in any group. I'm not saying that everybody gets to run over people, but in the main, most of us have stories that we could tell that would explain some of our experience, some of our worldview. We're not telling those stories enough. We're looking for no leadership, or leadership that saves us, as opposed to seeing ourselves as leaders, as opposed to building leadership, as opposed to acknowledging, accepting, embracing, and supporting leadership. And I don't hear the conversations going on in a way that I understand.
So I imagine with that vision and understanding of community and humanity, it might have been a reason why you agreed to come out of retirement and accept this challenge of the position.
Absolutely. The last time I got involved in the police treatment of people was the Kendra James. I think that was 2003. And I was heavily involved. I was writing, I was speaking, I was talking to people. And then I looked and I said, no, we have to have more than this. And I sort of receded. And I said, I want to see something different. We can't just march, 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 yell, 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 and go home. And then wait for the next incident. March, 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 yell, 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 go home. And when I got called and asked about taking this job, I thought, this is it. Here's a chance to really work on changing the institution that we say we want to see changed, and to have it come from people who are most affected by that institution. Now, of course, there is the flaw of talking about one institution as though it's not a part of a bigger system. That is a hard thing, and we have to keep that in mind. But it's exactly why I came out. I came out because I believed in the possibilities of this board, and I believed in the goals of this board, which were to give the public and the police information on what needed to be done.
So I'm going to jump in here right now with a reflection of something that you said earlier, and more of, I guess I'll say, I'll call it a reality check. The system is not going to allow itself to be dismantled. And even if you're inside of the belly of the beast sometimes, before you can dismantle any of those critical organs, it might digest you. Knowing what you know about the system, how were you able to step into this particular dynamic with any degree of optimism that people were actually going to be able to seize the information, process the information, and release the information to the rest of us?
Because I am eternally optimistic.
I'll roll with that.
I am a prisoner of hope. But okay. I think that the structure itself does allow for some, it's not intended to dismantle. It is intended to reform. And those are two different things. And you know, maybe dismantling needs to be a part of discussion. Certainly Angela Davis has taken that on and has written about it, and it needs to be explored. But at this point in time, we're simply talking about reform.
And for folks who are listening who may not be quite as sophisticated and want to argue, how do you define reform? Because I think that's a valid point.
Mm-hmm. I think that the process itself gets to define it. Okay, so one of the things that the COAB, that's what we call the Community Oversight Advisory Board, one of the things that they're doing right now is going around in various places in the community asking, what is it that you want the relationship to be between the community and the Portland Police Bureau? That's the first question. The second question is, what is the responsibility of the police in making that vision happen? The next question is, what is the responsibility of the community in making that happen? In one session, we introduced a fourth question. What are you personally going to do to contribute to this change? So the reform is actually defined by the answers to those questions. Okay? So if the community says, you know, we need taller police officers with kinder faces, that's an answer. That's not the only answer. It's one, maybe one of 17 or 25. Mm-hmm. But it's a place to look for what the community needs, not what the police are saying you need. We are in the process of trying to get that from as many people as possible in the Portland area. We're not asking just this community. We're asking for many communities to respond, to say, yes, we want a voice in this. Now, there are a number of people who think everything is fine.
Right.
They can just say, we think it's fine. But there are lots of people who are affected by policies, behaviors of our police officers. And not all of our police officers. Let me be real clear here. We're not talking about all the police officers are bad people.
Right.
Okay. We need to learn how to look at how institutions get in the way of our vision, how institutional barriers are erected in terms of policy so that the discussion stops and you and I end up fighting, not understanding that what has actually interceded there is that policy or that way of doing things that's been historic. So that's what needs to change, so we have the dialogue.
Right.
Ultimately, I believe that Portland police reform will require other reforms within other city entities. because they will need to be more responsive to the public, more reflective. They will use the data better. They will communicate better with the people who are receiving the services of our Portland Police Bureau.
Can I add another one?
Mm-hmm.
There will be insightful, proactive protection of the needs and the rights of people.
I think that's ultimately what we want.
And you know, because I look at some of the ways municipalities act, and there is too much hindsight and scrambling and covering of various parts instead of being, you know, engaged proactively with some insight and compassion and care.
But if you're not there at the table,
mm-hmm.
saying what insight
and compassion
proactive,
and care look like,
if you're not there saying what that looks like on an operational level, left foot, right foot, this is what you do every day, it won't happen because the institution was not designed to do that.
Mm-hmm.
You're listening to KBOO, your community radio station, 90.7 in Portland, 91.9 in Hood River, 104.3 in Corvallis, Albany. This is More Talk Radio. I am Cecil Prescott.
I am Celeste Carey, and we're here with Kathleen Sadat. And we are discussing the COAB, which is
the Community Oversight Advisory Board.
Right. And one of the things that we would like people to do is to discuss not only how, as Kathleen has said, they can be involved, but to share ways that they believe that these changes should be made, can be made, might be made, and what they are doing, have done, will do to make these changes come about. The phone number is 503-231-8187, and the lines are open today.
Kathleen, you mentioned about this, about COAB, mm-hmm. and about community involvement. How are people involved? How might they become involved? And I'll begin there.
Okay. Well, you can go to our website. I think it's COCAL COAB. If you plug that in, somehow you'll get to our website. I'm not real sophisticated
with
this stuff.
I'll find it for us and pass
but,
it on.
You can be on a subcommittee. You can attend meetings. You can give public input. You can invite us, the COAB, to bring the three questions to your group and have that group give input into the process. Call Mandy Hood or Cody Ridenour, and they'll begin to make it happen for you to have people come and ask the three questions. This is a very important part of what we're doing. So you can be involved in all those ways. You can write an email to us and say, this is what I think should happen. I think the thing that needs to be really clear, this is not a board that handles complaints, that is, resolves complaints. Mm-hmm. Now, we can hear your complaints, we can hear your experience. There's nobody going to stop you from doing that. But ultimately, we want your ideas, we want your thoughts, we want your values infused into whatever this reform is. And if the value is compassion, tell us how that works for you. A lot of people have said, we just want the officers not to be rough and abusive when they come and talk to us. You know, just, hello, how are you? Like people. And on the other side of it, officers feel like they're getting the cold eye and maybe aren't being regarded as very friendly. And I think that stiffens them up. I'm not making excuses for either side. I'm just telling you what I see and telling you what I hear. Somehow, somebody's got to take the first step in saying, hi, my name is. If that's what you think needs to happen, say it. If you think there's a flaw in some obscure policy that you read somewhere, write about it. Send it to us. Come to a meeting. And the meetings are posted, and the minutes are posted, and you can watch the meetings on YouTube, COCAL COAB. Come to a meeting and say, this is what I would like to see happen. This is what I would like to see happen. And if you have a rationale, if you say, because I think it will result in, we know and have seen that there are lots of people who are hurting. And they have no place to put that hurt. And to me, some of this is like anger. Where you put your anger is to make it work so that nobody else has to be angry or hurt. So we're waiting to hear, what do you think the relationship between the police and the community should be? Describe it, give it values, talk about it. What's the police responsibility? What's the community responsibility? And on your own, you can say, and this is how I'm going to contribute to that effort. Back in the 60s, when things were all heated up and people were making a lot of noise, we blamed the system for everything. And then somewhere, I guess maybe 70s, people started saying, we are the system. Well, we moved here now. We are 2016. And we are the system in the sense of having an opportunity to say, no, change this. Stop this. Do this instead. This is an opportunity.
So help me to understand, what's the end result of this commission's work? What are its exact duties in terms of its mandate? And
is it on point?
Okay, yes and no.
Okay.
The duties are, they're like six or seven. I didn't think to bring a leaflet with me, but primarily it's to make recommendations to the Department of Justice, to the City of Portland, to the Police Bureau, on things that will improve the relationship between the police and the community. And that means even looking at things that you may not think of as hurtful in that relationship and trying to find ways to resolve them. Well, some people think that it's okay for officers to swear at people. Portland police don't think that, at least in policy. So when that happens, people need to say, no, you need to reinforce it. You need to do more training, or you need to do this, or you need to do that. The other piece of what this group does is inform the public of what has been going on or what they see as necessary. So that's a part of the recommendations. Okay, this is a complicated structure. Let me say that. It is not optimally responsive and streamlined. Mm-hmm. So it's cumbersome.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So the board writes recommendations. They go to the Department of Justice, who looks at them, works with the police on the ones they think are viable to try to make those changes, and will report back, or they promise to report back soon. They haven't given us a date. But we have, the COAB has sent off, I think, about 48 recommendations
to the Federal Department of Justice.
Yes. Okay. Yes. That means that also the police have seen them. The public has seen them because they are done in public. We are a public body and we do business in public. And the mayor or the city commissioners, if they have looked, have seen them. Okay, so they've been available to the public. They're posted on our website. So in that sense, they're on track. Now, it's taken quite a while to get there. And there was some omissions at the beginning of this that we're still paying for in terms of information and team building, etc. I believe that the COAB today is a wonderful group of people doing an excellent job, working hard. These people have voted to have their meetings twice a month instead of the once a month they originally agreed to. They are also going to subcommittee meetings. And that means they're also working when they're not in subcommittee meetings or in main meetings, and they need to be appreciated. And the public needs to show up and thank them and tell them they're wonderful and beautiful and ask them if they can bring them some lemonade. I mean, this is...
Seriously.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Now, these are volunteers?
All volunteers.
Yes.
I'm paid staff, and there are three other paid staff that support this. Okay? These are all volunteers meeting twice a month, plus a subcommittee meeting, plus reading whatever is needed to prep for those things.
And engaging with the public.
And engaging with the public. And lately being disrupted. And that's been a terrible thing to
happen. The public meetings have been disrupted?
They have been disrupted.
Okay. So someone comes to the public meeting, and you mentioned earlier, you know, you define the exact duties of this commission, and people are confused about who to complain to about a whole range of issues. So people come to the meeting, and what happens?
It's Robert Sousa order. Okay. We're not the complaint piece, but you can, in the public comment, if you want to stand up and complain for 3 minutes, you can do that. Okay. That doesn't help the process. What we want is for your complaint to result in a recommendation. So come and complain, say, you know, this officer did so and so and so and so. So what I want to see happen in the future is that this kind of training be introduced so that no officer does this, or we minimize the number of officers who are doing this. And then the board will either then or at some time develop the recommendation, put it back to the board. The only way a recommendation can go forward is if the full board approves it. It can't come out of a subcommittee. It has to go through the full board in a public meeting.
Okay. And let me just for information and clarity. So the board, not the names of the members of the board, but how were they chosen? How are they chosen?
Now you open the proverbial can.
Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry.
This is good.
Again, it's a very complicated process. Mm-hmm. And the process is complicated because there was an attempt to get representative from many different communities involved, okay? So the commissioners each appoint someone. The commissioners.
The city commissioners.
Yes, mm-hmm. Each appoint someone. Then there's the PICA, the Committee on Disabilities, and the Human Rights Commission, who appoint, I think, one each plus a joint person. There are 5 members of the Portland Police Bureau who are non-voting, who are appointed by the chief. I hope I didn't leave anybody out, because the rest are selected from a community process that involves stakeholders in the community from various organizations and institutions who have a list of the applicants, go through the applicants, and determine who it is that they think should serve on the board. So it's a 20-member board, which is a large board. That's a really large board, 5 of whom are not voting. They are advisors to the board, and they're doing great now. And then there's the 15 people who are the voting members who, you know, decide on what goes forward.
And not that you can read the minds of the 15 members, but do you have a sense of determination to complete their task? Is there a sense of we're here to do this?
Anybody who votes themselves 2 meetings a month instead of 1 and still goes to a subcommittee and still works, I think has shown determination to complete the task. The task is scheduled, I think, for 5 years out. We're starting into year 2. And I think the people here want this to work. Now, you know, like with anything, where we start to have our problems in tactics, not the superordinate goal. We all agree on the goal. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. And so that has started to work out on process, and people are starting to pay attention to process, and I think it gets better.
Great.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. This is More Talk Radio with Cecil Prescott and myself, Celeste Carey. We're here with our guest today, Kathleen Sadat, and we are speaking about the Citizen Oversight Advisory Board as part of the Department of Justice settlement here with the Portland Police and the City of Portland. If you have questions or comments, especially if you want to get involved and are solution-oriented, give us a call at 503-231-8187.
Kathleen, I really appreciate you taking the time to talk about this.
Cecil, I think it is so important.
It is. And a lot of what you've done over the decades have been really important work. Mm-hmm. We began the program by talking about little visioning things, mm-hmm. and ideas about community. I've been interested. You have a Facebook page, and you've been posting. I've seen things recently about movements over the decades, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. and highlighting certain individuals who made a strong impact. Share something about what type of people inspire you that keep you going.
Besides the fact that you're a prisoner of optimism. Which I can roll with. I like that.
I think the people that inspire me are the people who are willing to learn and willing to teach. Evo Gordley.
Hmm.
Wonderful listener. She listens. She listens. And she teaches. That's a role that we need to fill in a lot of places. We make assumptions about what people know and don't know. Mm-hmm. What we need to assume is that there's some things about which we know more. We know more about being black than other people who are not black. Why be mad at them for what they don't know?
What they can't know, really. But
there was no way for them to know. Mm-hmm. How would they know? And then when they do act like they know, we get mad at them because they're arrogant.
But we've left a vacuum.
Well, we are experts at creating double binds because they've been created for us. Yes. We have picked up the skills that have been used to control us. So we need to look at how we do what we do in a new light. What is the real goal here? And everybody black doesn't have the same goal. So what is our organizing principle then? If it's not race, what is it? I think race is a part of it. But we are not a monolith as African American people. We are not the same. There are black Republicans. There are black Democrats. And a lot of black people used to be Republicans, because when I was growing up, everybody was Republican. Party of Lincoln. We need a fresh look. We need new tools. We need new ways of looking at stuff. Now, I got no problem with the people who are using the old ways to get the attention.
Mm-hmm.
What do you do after you have the attention of the people that you're trying to get to attend? If you don't have a plan or some planners, then all you did was make some noise.
That had been the mode of operating for quite a while. And I want to say that it was in the 90s we kind of finally woke up and recognized this is not an efficient model. You know, it was efficient before, when so much of the suffering and injustice was hidden away, purposefully hidden away. But now that we're aware of it, whether people want to accept it, you know, or not, you're right, it's time for a new dynamic. And I see some of that new dynamic coming out of movements like some of the chapters of Black Lives Matter, mm-hmm. and young organizers. And then who was our guest? We had Reverend Sekou was here and speaking to the new way of organizing at a grassroots level and getting people out to move. So when I hear you talking about coming to the table with solutions and the double bind, I think too often we forget we have to shake off some mental shackles, mm-hmm, here, mm-hmm, and mm-hmm, go ahead and, mm-hmm, create, mm-hmm, those solutions that we talk about, mm-hmm, mm-hmm, but are kind of like fearful of bringing to the forefront because we don't want to rock the boat too much. But the boat is rocking, the boat is sinking.
You know, this is some of the scariest work that I think people do. You are always in danger of losing friends, you're in danger of losing your supporters, you're in danger. Anything you do can cost you something. But again, I was saying to Cecil earlier, I've been watching the special things on Muhammad Ali and thinking, God, what a guy. What a guy. He said, money's not everything. He said, you know, because he used his privilege, he used his status to make a difference. So it must have been scary for him when he said, no, you have to put me in jail. I'm not going to go kill people. Mm-hmm. It's against my religious beliefs. It must have been terrifying for him. It must have been terrifying for all the people who ever walked across the Pettus Bridge, the Edmund Pettus Bridge. It must have been terrifying. It's been terrifying for those of us who have marched here in Oregon on various issues. Yes, you will be frightened.
You will be frightened. You're creating a new language. You're creating a new energy, a new dynamic, and it's never been mapped before except in people's dreams of freedom.
But that's what we work on anyway, is our dreams of freedom. Mm-hmm. It's our dreams of being one. It's our dreams of being able to at least respect, if not like. I think you can love without liking, but respect is so important to people. That is acknowledging the humanity in me, and I will acknowledge it in you. And when we start there, I think we have a different conversation than if you're they and I'm us. That's a whole different conversation.
We are continuing this conversation with Kathleen Sadat this morning. Our numbers are 503-231-8182. 87.
Excuse me. 503-231-8187.
My mind is not working.
That's
at
it's
all.
Monday. You know how Mondays are.
It's the heat. That's it. That's the heat.
You know what? And we're sticking to it. Like everything else is sticking to us. We'll go to our caller. Thank you for holding. Good morning, Francis.
How you doing? I relate to what you're doing this morning, Cecil. I do that same thing. Numbers that I've known forever. All of a sudden, some mornings that I haven't had my coffee yet, I can't make sure that I know that number right or not.
Yes, ma'am.
But I missed the beginning. So you had just mentioned that the goal that the people on this board have now come to a consensus and they share the same goal. But I didn't hear what that goal is. What is the goal of this board?
To listen to the community, to do their own research, and to make recommendations to the Department of Justice, the City of Portland's mayor, and the Police Bureau on reforms that will improve the relationship between the community and the police.
Is it okay? Now, as I understand the way that this went down, they don't really include the racial profiling or any kind of racist events that occurred. It's more about the treatment of people with mental health issues. Is that still where the focus is on these recommendations, or can it include the racial profiling?
It can include anything that falls under the category of mental health issues, and that includes race. And there are discussions on racial profiling. And the
how are they including race under the mental health issues?
Because there are people who are different races who have mental health issues.
Oh, okay. So if they have mental health issues, then their issues will be, or their recommendations will be discussed. But my concern is...
Wait a minute, Francis. Let her finish. I think she had part two for you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, go ahead.
If there is an issue around people who are mentally ill, who are also, say, African American, the recommendation can be to collect the data or to train the police in how to work with African Americans who also have mentally ill issues or just African Americans. You can include that under the umbrella of mental health. There's nothing to stop the recommendations from the board. They are their thinking is their own.
Okay, that's good. These recommendations, they go to the Justice Department and the Police Bureau and the city. Is there any, do they have to be adhered to, or is it just a recommendation?
It is a recommendation. This is an advisory board.
Okay, and then my other question was about, you said that sometimes these meetings with the community are disruptive. what causes the disruption? What is the problem?
Well, that's a good question. Thanks for bringing it up.
Well, let me see where to start with this one. This is not a problem just of this board. It is a problem in the city right now. There are a small group of people who are going from meeting to meeting who are finding ways to disrupt those meetings. We had one incident at Citizens Review Committee where a panelist had water thrown on him by one of members of this group. Those same people have come to our meetings. They have disobeyed the rules of the meeting and been excluded, or at least one has been excluded from the meeting twice. I've had to close down the meeting.
Do they have specific issues that they are concerned about?
One is quite concerned about the fact that we set up a filming area in our meetings. And
you did what?
We set up an area in our meeting so that anyone who wants to film has to film from that area.
Oh.
Okay. And that's within the Oregon law, and it is the decision of the chair to do that.
It's an effort to be transparent.
It's also an effort to, some people are intimidated by cameras.
Right.
And we had one person who was putting cameras in people's faces, and several board members came to me and said, hey, this is making me really nervous. You don't want your people who are trying to make recommendations to feel intimidated. So we set up this filming area. Now,
This group is identified, and they're the only ones that are causing disruption, is this small group?
To my knowledge, they're pretty much the same people over and over again.
Is it a group that you know? Is it an organized group, or just a group of people?
It's a group of people who have come together to challenge the authority of some of the boards that are advisory to the city.
Do they represent an organization, I think is what I'm asking.
I don't know.
A certain group.
I don't know.
It's just the same people.
I don't know if they have a name.
You might be able to find some more information, Frances, in like the Street Roots, which would put, has been covering this issue.
Yeah, I read Street Roots.
Yeah.
The last comment I have, and it's not one that really is, it's kind of Israel, I guess is the word, but I have looked at how, you know, some people in our community really respect and love the police and see no problems with them, and other people are very suspicious and leery and would rather just not ever have to speak to them at all. And I'm wondering what the difference is. And to me, the difference is how people are treated by the police department, period. And I don't know that you can train someone to be respectful if they don't already have it in them to respect people, especially people of other races. So I don't know how you can change that or train that. Or, you know, there's a culture, as they call it, among the police to accept this as okay. And to me, that means that there is not one good police officer, because any police officer who will accept this behavior as okay is allowing it to continue. So I don't know how you fix that and how you train people to be respectful when they should already have it in them to respect everyone in our community. So I'll leave it at that, and you guys take care.
Okay. Thank you.
I think you can train people. I think there's a lot of work that's been done around implicit bias, and it's being used more and more in police bureaus across the country to try to get people to see where their biases are. I think there's a way of training people to behave that, at least whether they feel the respect or not, they're showing some respect by saying, by speaking respectfully. That is, not yelling, not cursing. Not accusatory, but beginning to have a conversation with people. I think they will learn, or people will learn respect by doing the behaviors.
Yeah, it's a rote practice for some people. But let me ask you this.
Well, let me say one more thing.
Okay.
We are not talking about every police officer on the Portland Police Bureau. Okay. This is not a universal condemnation of the police bureau.
And actually, that's a great segue, because to that end, I want to say, we need to create a system whereby those who are good, who come into the department with the proper attitude and response and love and concern and the desire to actually serve and protect, can feel safe to continue that kind of behavior.
I agree.
Feel free to point out where there's deviation and be supported.
I agree. For some years now, I've asked why Dave Barrios is not a trainer in the Portland Police Bureau.
He's a wonderful person. I will ask it again in public
on the radio.
Here.
What he knows is amazing.
It is.
Let me ask a question because I hear both of you affirming that they are good individuals.
Yes.
But earlier you mentioned, I think it's important to emphasize the institutional.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm.
And how even if you have, you know, there was this great quote that Muhammad Ali said that I read this morning talking about white people and said, I can't remember exactly, but Google it. but it said in essence that, you know, even if you have individuals who are really nice,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yes.
that does not transform the institution.
Mm-hmm, right.
And that, you know, just saying that they are good police officers doesn't solve the problem.
And I totally
no,
agree.
No, but I think what is happening is the conversation bogs down when the whole group of people in the institution feel attacked. So that's one of the problems. Mm. And we want to keep the conversational lines open. The work on the institution is the work that the COAB is doing, but it cannot be successful unless it hears from other people. You know, one of the things that sometimes when I am not feeling optimistic, I think, well, all these people wanted all these changes. Where are they? Are they saying, okay, you guys go take care of that? This is too dull. This is too hard. This is too whatever. All these people who are in the streets saying, we want it to be different. Now is your chance to say how you want it to be different. The institutional change occurs at a policy and cultural level. Institutional change is not easy. There is a science associated with it. And we need to get in tune with that science because it is not simply a matter of writing the memo. There are structures that need to be built within the institution to carry information, to receive information, and to carry people through the emotional transition from there to there, or from here to there, from there to here, wherever it is, whichever way you're going.
And to protect those who yes. are willing to make that transition.
Yes. To protect and elevate.
Yes.
To use those people in the training of other people.
Going back to Dave Barrios.
But that means that, mm-hmm. exactly, that means that you have to have champions within the community, champions within the organization, and champions within the other structures that support or are attached to that organization.
And that's long, hard, slow work in terms of institutional change. And I imagine that some people, you ask, where are the people?
Mm-hmm.
Don't want, unable for a variety of reasons to get bogged down into that very important work.
You know, Cecil, they don't have to show up every week. But if you are a fraternity or a sorority, you could designate a couple of people to show up every other meeting. If you're a social club, you could do that. If you're a church, you could say, yes, this is a part of our mission. This is a part of our ministry,
mm-hmm.
is institutional change at the police bureau. And you could ask a few people to show up
yes.
once a month. If you something other kind of organization or some other kind of group, or if you're an individual, you can show up every other month. The voices in the room need to be, yeah, I heard it too.
That's our Wonder Dog mascot.
The voices in the room need to be from all over the community. We need all yes. kinds of people there. And they need to, we hope they will bring constructive helpful recommendations. Again, if you want to come and complain about something the police did, fine, we'll let you have the time. You get your 3 minutes. But that's not what this board is for. We already know there's a problem. That's why there is a settlement agreement. That's why this board exists.
If you want to feel more satisfied about what you're doing, then you come with a solution. And I'm pretty sure that people have undergone some kind of torment or trauma would know what could have been done better. They may not have the whole solution. So, you know, and important for me, my question would be to kind of reiterate again, how do you suck up that fear and come forward and offer that solution, that change?
I don't know about sucking up fear. When I was a little kid, my dad would say, go upstairs and get me a pair of socks out of the top drawer. And I'd say, Daddy, it's dark up there. And he'd say, yes. So I don't know. You just manage the fear. I mean, I think that's a lot of what we're asking the police to do, especially the ones who have been told that that all the people who don't look like them are bad people. They're scared, so they shoot you, some of them. So we need to do the same thing. We're scared. You hold on. You decide that your fear is manageable. There's not much to be afraid of in a public meeting. Maybe some other things or some other places are more fearful. But most of the people who get things done just learn to manage their fears. I'm not saying the fears aren't legitimate. I'm not saying the losses aren't real. I'm just saying it's a decision you make as to what you're going to put into making the change that you say you want to see.
We have about 2 minutes, and we're going to try to get Sunny in.
Thank you. Hi there.
Good morning.
Hi.
Good morning. I just have a little bit of interest around the disruption that is occurring at your meetings pertaining to the cameras. People are attempting to photograph you folks on the board with their cameras, or is this occurring? Do you think it's done as perhaps an intimidation tactic? It sounds like it, because we're going through gang stalking out here, and we've been photographed with the little cell phones, and we've had gang incursion onto my employer's property. We've had a white supremacist noose put on his property. I'm half Indian. And so whatever is going on there sounds a little bit like gang stalking.
Well, I don't know what the motivation is. I know it's not just happening in our group, in our meetings. It's happening in several meetings, including city council meetings, where these same people have had to be put out, which means the council members leave the room until they're put out, then they come back. It's a disruption of city business and an intimidation of those citizens or those residents who would like to work with the city in making improvements. I don't know. What I know is that people came to me, several board members came to me and said that they put those cameras in my face. I don't know what they're doing with the film. I don't know why they're doing this. They need to back off. I don't like this guy following me with the camera.
No, I don't blame you at all about that. Are they identified at all? Do they have any name or...
Yes, they have names. They introduce themselves.
Do they have an organizational name?
Not that I know
of.
Sunny, we're out of time.
Okay,
sorry.
The last thing I was going to say, out here in Washington County, we're going through this gang hell because of property, interest in my employer's property. And we have the reverse situation. We cannot get patrol presence here. So we've got an opposite situation. And it's kind of ironic, isn't it? But we all have to keep standing. And I appreciate what you've all had to say today. Thank you.
Thank you, Sunny. And thank you, Kathleen, for spending your time here with us this morning. And
Cecil, I think this is one of the most important things that's happened in our city in a long time. I'm encouraging all those people who care about this issue to find a way to get involved, to find a way to ask for people to come and ask the three big questions at their church, their community center, wherever they want to see it, and to volunteer their thoughts. Come to a meeting, call us, right on the website, whatever you can do. This is important.
Thank you so much. Participate and be a person of change. Thank you, Kathleen Sadat.
Thank you, Cecil.
You've been listening to More Talk Radio here on KBOO.FM. Stay tuned to the Old Mole Variety Hour. I am Cecil Prescott, and for my co-host Celeste Carey, we bid you a good day.
Tune in every first Tuesday of the month from 6 to 7 p.m. for Transpositive PDX on KBOO for unique programming addressing the transgender, non-binary, two-spirit, and gender non-conforming communities in Portland and beyond. This month's show will focus on providing information about non-binary genders, and will also give information on the June Pride Parade and Trans Pride March. That's every first Tuesday of the month from 6 to 7 p.m. on 90.7 FM KBOO Radio.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of The Lost Boys of Portlandia, a film premiere gala and fundraiser for Outside the Frame, Tuesday, June 7th at 7 p.m. at Revolution Hall in Portland. Outside the Frame is a new organization that empowers homeless and marginalized youth by producing films with youth that convey their life experience. They will premiere The Lost Boys of Portlandia, a riff on Peter Pan, where real lost boys and girls debate if and how to return to mainstream society.